The Gospel of John, chapter 7. I'm going to be reading in the New King James Version. Before we begin this chapter, and into chapter 8, there's a couple of things I want to say about these two chapters. As we begin to look at these two chapters, we're going to notice something significantly different about these two chapters than the two chapters just previous, chapter 5 and chapter 6. We spent a great deal of time, it seems as though, in those two chapters. But if you'll remember back, those of you who were here, if you remember back on those chapters were significant in the fact that there were miracles performed by Jesus to cause people to believe that he was the Christ, the Son of God. And based upon those miracles that were performed, there were conversations or dialogues that took place based upon those miracles to further cause people to believe that Jesus was the Christ, the Son of God. We're not going to see that in these two chapters. These two chapters do not start out with a miracle like chapter 5 and chapter 6 did. In these two chapters, we see the narration by the Apostle John in this text and the conversations that Jesus has based upon a journey that he makes to the city of Jerusalem. So he comes to the city of Jerusalem, and based upon him coming to the city of Jerusalem during a feast called the Feast of Tabernacles, these two chapters are laid out in regard to that feast and the conversation or the dialogue that takes place between Jesus, the religious leaders in the city of Jerusalem, and the people who would be present at that feast as well. And so that's what these two chapters are laid out. That's how they're laid out, much different from the previous two chapters. But similar to the previous two chapters, all that Jesus says is still to cause people to believe that he is the Christ, the Son of God. So it's not different from the purpose of the writing of the book. John 20, verse 30 and 31, remember, John wrote, and wrote about seven miracles to cause people to believe that Jesus was the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name. But the dialogues that take place in chapter 7 and chapter 8 also are for that purpose. Chapter 7 in verse 1 in the New King James Version, after these things. We've noticed that before as the section of the book is described for us after these things. As a matter of fact, chapter 5, and in verse 1, after this, and then chapter 6, after these things. So chapter 7 begins another section of the book, continues through chapter 8, after these things. The things under consideration were those that transpired in chapter 6. So after these things, Jesus walked in Galilee, for he did not want to walk in Judea, because the Jews sought to kill him. After these things, after the events transpired in chapter 6, then Jesus walked in Galilee. He walked in Galilee. The word walk there means literally he walked, but the point under consideration is he walked about. He lived. He conducted himself in the preaching of the teaching of the word in Galilee. For, and that's that little Greek conjunction, this tells us the reason why he spent his time in Galilee. For he did not want to walk in Judea because the Jews sought to kill him. He did not want to walk in Judea. He did not want to live. He did not want to go about preaching and teaching in the Roman province of Judea. Instead, he stayed in the Roman province of Galilee. And the reason he did that is because the Jews sought to kill him. Now here's that phrase, the Jews, again. We've seen it several times in our study of John already. First time we noticed the Jews was back in chapter 1 when the Jews had sent a delegation to John the Baptizer asking him who he was. The Jews under consideration were those religious leaders of the Sanhedrin Council, the Pharisees and the scribes, Sadducees, that were antagonistic and hostile toward John the Baptizer and Jesus. The next time we saw the phrase, the Jews, it had reference just to the Jewish people in general. And then a third time, we saw this phrase, the Jews, remember, was in the last chapter. It had reference, evidently, to the religious leaders in Capernaum, in a synagogue, who had questioned Jesus. But here the Jews under consideration, whom do you suppose they be? The Jews sought to kill him. Well, this actually goes back to chapter 5, on another occasion in which Jesus had come to the city of Jerusalem. Chapter 5, and in verse 18. Chapter 5, and in verse 18. Remember, in this chapter, Jesus had healed a man at the pool of Bethesda. And he had done this on the Sabbath day. And so, John 5, beginning in verse 16, for this reason the Jews persecuted Jesus and sought to kill him, because he had done these things on the Sabbath. But Jesus answered them, "My Father has been working until now, and I have been working." Therefore the Jews sought all the more to kill him, because he not only broke the Sabbath, but also said that God was his Father, making himself equal with God. So on a previous occasion, when Jesus had come to the city of Jerusalem, he had performed a miracle on the Sabbath day, and the religious leaders call that work. Of course, it was not work. Well, I guess you could classify it as work, as God would have it. But it wasn't work in regard to a violation of the law of Moses in regard to working on the Sabbath day. And so they had held this against Jesus because he worked on the Sabbath day, which they say was a violation of the law of Moses, and because he made himself equal with God. So that's the Jews under consideration. So he walks in Galilee. He continues to go about living and conducting his life in the region of Galilee, because he didn't want to walk. He didn't want to, at this time, teach and preach in the Roman province of Judea, because those unbelieving Jews, the religious leaders, were seeking to kill him. Now what we're going to notice as well, if you'll notice verse 12 of our text, verse 12 of John 7, "And there were much murmuring among the people concerning him." So in this dialogue that is going to follow here that John narrates for us, he's going to speak to the people who have come to the city of Jerusalem during this Feast of Tabernacles. But he's also going to have a dialogue with these Jews as well. And there is a distinction made in the context, verse 12 again. "And there was much murmuring among the people concerning him. Some said he is good, others said no, on the contrary, he deceives the people." Verse 13, "No. However, no one spoke openly of him for fear of the Jews." So the phrase "the people" there and "the Jews" are two distinct different groups. The people present, of course, were Jews. That was their ethnicity. But the Jews are those who are antagonistic and hostile toward Jesus. They're the ones who want to kill him. And so this idea of he walked in Galilee because the Jews sought to kill him is going to come back into play here in the context, and that's why it's mentioned at the beginning of the chapter itself. Verse 2, John 7. "Now the Jews' feast," and note that, "the Jews' feast of tabernacles at hand." The Jews' feast. It's kind of evident that when John recorded this gospel account, he recorded it for the sake primarily of Gentiles. Because if it was written primarily for the Jews' sake, he wouldn't have had to mention, "Now the Jews' feast of Passover was at hand." All Jews would have understood the feast of Passover was a Jewish feast. So he wouldn't have had to mention the Jews. So he mentions that for the sake of the Gentiles, because Gentiles had all of their religious feasts and festivals and so forth, and as well as did the Jews. And so it's clear and evident that he is writing for primarily a Gentile audience, perhaps, that would not have understood what this Feast of Tabernacle was. It was a Jewish feast. "Now the Jews' Feast of Tabernacle was at hand." The Jews' Feast of Tabernacle. We want to learn about the Feast of Tabernacle. We go to Leviticus chapter 23, verse 34 through 36. Also, Deuteronomy 16 talks about this feast as well. Sometimes it's referred to as the Feast of Booths. Sometimes it's referred to as the Feast of Ingathering. Here, the Feast of Tabernacles. Literally, the word tabernacles here could have been translated booths. As a matter of fact, the word tabernacles is a compound word in the Greek that literally means tent pitching. Tent pitching. What was the Feast of Tabernacles? Well, first and foremost, it was a feast of thanksgiving to God. It occurred for 7 days in the latter part of September or the middle part of October every year. And referred to the Feast of Ingathering because it would be the time in which the crops would be brought in. And so it would be a time of thanksgiving. But it was also to commemorate the blessings bestowed upon the children of Israel during the time that they wandered in the wilderness and lived in booths or tents. Referred to as booths or tents or tabernacles, because when they wandered in the wilderness and traveled from place to place, they would have to live in such dwellings. That is, they would go to a certain place and, well, they would camp out and stay there for a while. Everyone didn't have a tent, as we think of a tent, to live in. As a matter of fact, it would be a lot of burden to even carry all of that. So what would they do? Well, they would go to a place. They would assemble. Some would pitch literal tents that we think of, made of goat skins or some kind of animal skins. But others would build booths. That is, they would build what we might refer to as a lean-to or something of that nature. They would cut branches off of trees and build them a shelter to keep them from the sun, keep them from the weather, the elements. And so that's why it's referred to as the Feast of Booths, because people would live in it. And we see the Feast of Tabernacles. It was one of the three major feasts that all male Jews were required to attend in the city of Jerusalem every year. The Feast of Tabernacle, Feast of Pentecost, and Feast of Passover. And so this was a time in which all religiously and devout Jews would come to the city of Jerusalem. It was a major feast time in which they gave thanksgiving to God and commemorated the wilderness wanderings. Now, during this particular period of time, they would build booths. They would put up a temporary structure, sometimes on the top of the flat-roofed houses, sometime in the courtyard where their houses were, sometimes outside the city of Jerusalem on the hills and so forth, and in the plains surrounding the city of Jerusalem. All of this to commemorate the blessings that God bestowed upon them and give thanks for the blessings He bestowed upon them during the wandering years and for the ingathering of the crops. So now the Feast of Tabernacle was at hand. So the Feast of Tabernacle is going to take place in the city of Jerusalem. But it's just mentioned here that Jesus is in Galilee. So Jesus is going to have to travel from the Roman province of Galilee to Judea if He plans on going to this feast. And since He is one who would keep the law of Moses, indeed he would attend. Verse 3. His brothers therefore said to him, his brothers of course are James and Joseph and Judah and Simon, and he also had sisters. Mark 6 and in verse 3. That's the brothers or brethren under consideration. Those children that were born to Mary and Joseph after the birth of Jesus. He was the firstborn. So Jesus had brethren. He had brothers. He had sisters. And that's the brothers under consideration in our context. His brothers therefore said to him. Therefore said to him. Why did they therefore say to him? Because the Feast of Tabernacles is at hand. The implication is this family was devout and observed the Feast of Tabernacles. Now his brothers therefore said to him, depart from here, that is from the Roman province of Galilee, and go into Judea, that is go to the city of Jerusalem for this feast, that your disciples also may see the works that you are doing. May see the works that you're doing. The word works here has reference to his mighty miracles that he is performing. Jesus has been performing miracles from place to place to cause people to believe that he is the Christ, the Son of God, cause people to believe that he's the long-awaited Messiah. And so his brothers give him advice on this occasion. Depart from here and go into Judea, that your disciples also may see the works that you're doing. And here's the reason why they advise him to do this. You know, he has claimed to be the Messiah. He has performed these miracles to demonstrate the fact that he's the long-awaited Messiah or Christ, the anointed one who was to come, the Son of God. And so since he has made this claim, he says, for no one, that's that little Greek conjunction gar, gives reason for that previous statement, for no one does anything in secret while he himself seeks to be known openly. No one does anything in secret. That is, if you're going to run for politics today, you don't do things by hiding away. You don't do things in secret. You don't do things in private. No, you want to put yourself out there in the eyes of the public so they can see you and observe you, come to know who you are. Now, that sounds like good advice, does it not? Because everyone who wants to be known publicly has to put themselves before the public. And so his brothers recognize this. For no one does anything in secret while he himself seeks to be known openly or publicly. If you do these things, show yourself to the world. Now, note that little word, if. If you do these things. No. Since you do these things. Matter of fact, I don't recommend the New International Version, but it translates the word if there since. And that's the way it should have been translated. How do I know that? Because we simply go back to the third verse. Depart from here and go to Judea, that your disciples also may see the works, that is, the miracles that you are doing. So they had not denied that he had performed some mighty deeds, mighty acts, mighty wonders, or miracles. Since he has done these things, then he needs to show himself openly. He needs to make a public display of himself in Judea. For no one does anything in secret while he himself seeks to be known openly. Since, or if you do these things, show yourself to the world. Show yourself to the world, to the people of the world. That is, the people of the world in general. And if you are the Messiah, if you are the anointed one of God, if you are the long-awaited king who is to come, the best place to do that is where? In Judea, in Jerusalem, the place in which you will rule and reign. Well, of course, if they think, which they do not, because Jesus is going to classify them as unbelievers, if they think he is the Messiah, the long-awaited Christ that was to come, they think that he's going to be an earthly Messiah, an earthly king. So, since you do these things, show yourself to the world. Now, this word world here is going to be used in different sense in the context. Show yourself to the world. That is, to the people of the world in general. But in a few moments in our context, we're going to see this word world used in a totally different way. It has reference to simply the ungodly of the world. Note verse 7, jumping ahead just a moment. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me because I testify of it that its works are evil. The world cannot hate you. The world is the ungodly people of the world cannot hate you. Why? Because when you think like the world, that is like worldly people, ungodly people of the world, when you act like ungodly people of the world, then the world cannot hate you. Why? Because you show yourself to be among them. You show yourself to be approved by them. Acceptable to them. So they're not going to hate you. So that's the way the word world is used there. The ungodly of the world. Here, show yourself to the world. To the people of the world in general. Verse 5. For even, and here's that Greek conjunction gar again. It gives a reason. for this, for even his brothers, note this, did not believe in him. They didn't believe that he was truly the Messiah. They didn't believe that he was truly the Christ, the Son of God. So what are they doing? Well, they're testing him. They're doing the same thing that other Jews had done before that we've studied about. They want him to prove and demonstrate openly that he is the Son of God, that he is the Christ. Now, I'm not sure how many miracles these brothers have seen, but how many does he have to perform? How many does he have to perform to cause people to believe that he is the Christ, the Son of God? Only one should have been sufficient.
I'm sure they had seen more than one.
I'm sure they perhaps had as well, because they also lived in Galilee. And so, if they had not even seen more than one or two or three, they had known and heard about all of these miracles that he had performed, surely. But they do not believe. So they're testing him. They're proving him. They're wanting him to do what the Jews before have wanted him to do. But he has said it on many occasions that he is God in the flesh, that he is the long-awaited Messiah who is to come. Verse 6, John 7. Then Jesus said to them, "My time has not yet come, but your time is always ready." Now this is said in connection with what they had told him. That is, leave, depart, Galilee, and go to Judea. And so what's stated in verse 6 is in connection with that. So he said to them, "My time has not yet come." Your time is always ready. My time. Note, my time and your time. My time ought to be God's time, because God has a time schedule. We don't know what it is. And Jesus didn't know what it was. It's like the time and the destruction of Jerusalem. No one knows except my Father who is in heaven. Not me nor the angels of heaven. Only my Father knows. Why? Because he's under the direction of the Father. The Father will tell him when it's time. So my time has not yet come. What time is he talking about? Well, sometimes we'll see this idea of his time or hour not yet present. Sometimes it has reference to his arrest and crucifixion. So sometimes when we see this idea of my time has not yet come or my hour has not yet come, it has reference to the idea of his arrest and crucifixion. But here, in the immediate context, it is the time of going up to Judea. That's the time under consideration. Because this is still not the time of his arrest and crucifixion. That will occur perhaps 6 months or more in the future from this context, when he goes back to the city of Jerusalem for the last time during the time of the Passover. So when he says, "My time has not yet come," the best time for me and the most opportune time for me to go to Judea is not right now. That's what he's telling them. But your time is always ready. That is, your time is always present. Your time is always present. They're devout Jews. The Feast of Tabernacle is going to start. It'll last for 7 days. And since they go and observe the Feast of Tabernacle, then their time to go, they can go right now. It's at hand to them. It's present. It's time to go. That's why they were telling Jesus, "Depart from here. It's time to go." The Feast of Tabernacle is going to take place. It's time to go. Well, Jesus says, the best time for me to go to Judea, to Jerusalem, is not right now. But the best time for you to go is go. Your time is at hand. It's present. Go ahead and go. That's what he's telling them to do. But he's not going right now. Does that mean that he's not going to observe the Feast of Tabernacle? No. He's going to observe the Feast of Tabernacle. He's just not going at this present time, because the time is not right for him. And in the context, the reason the time is not right for him is evidently because the Jews have laid a plot to kill him. Those who are antagonistic and hostile toward Jesus, knows that he will keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And so they've laid a plot to kill him. This comes into the context. Note, we read earlier in verse 11 and following, again, the Jews sought him at the feast and said, "Where is he?" And there was much murmuring among the people concerning him. Some said he is good, others said, "No, on the contrary, he deceives the people." So where is he? They wanted to kill him. They're looking for him. His family, his brothers have come to the Feast of Tabernacle, but he's not come. Where's he at? The Jews are seeking him on that occasion. And so that's going to come into context, and we'll see more of that later on. Verse 6 again, "My time has not yet come, but your time is always ready. It's at hand, it's present." You go on. Verse 7, "The world cannot hate you." Who's he speaking to? He's speaking to his brothers. "The world cannot hate you because it hates me." The world cannot hate you. They're unbelievers. They're like the Jews. They're like the people who simply do not recognize him and acknowledge him as the Messiah, the Christ, the Son of God. So they think like those people. They act like those people. They've tried to test him. They're simply like those people. They're like the ungodly of the world. So the world cannot hate them. As a matter of fact, the world, the ungodly world, the ungodly people of the world, they would be friendly toward them. But note whom they cannot be friendly toward. "The world cannot hate you, but it hates me." Because they don't agree with me. Your thinking and your behavior agrees with them, so they don't hate you. My thinking and my behavior disagrees with them, and so they hate me. They're hostile toward me. They're antagonistic toward me. "The world cannot hate you, but it hates me." Why? "Because I testify of it that its works are evil." Its actions, its deeds, its behavior is evil. That is, the works, deeds, and actions of the ungodly are evil. It's wicked. So he tells his brothers in verse 8, "You," and it's plural in the Greek, "you go up to this feast." And we see this word, "this feast," it's literally "the feast." Because the feast is that which was mentioned earlier in verse 2, the Feast of Tabernacles. So you go up to the feast. Note that, you go up. They're in Galilee, perhaps still in Capernaum. We don't know where they're at this particular period of time. But you go up to Galilee, or you go up to Jerusalem. That is, they're going from lower elevation up in elevation to the city of Jerusalem. So you go up to the feast. I am, note this, I am not yet going up to the feast. I'm not yet going up. Why? Because it's not the right time. It's not the most opportune time for me to go. Because Jesus knows, he's omniscient. He knows the unbelieving Jews have plotted to kill him and put him to death. That's why he had remained in Galilee. And he knows when he goes up to Jerusalem on the first day of the feast, they're going to be looking for him. But the feast lasts 7 days, so he can choose any day of the 7 days and go to the Feast of Tabernacles and still observe it. That way he will throw the plot of the unbelieving Jews away. "You go up to the feast. I am not yet going up to the feast. For my time has not yet fully," that is, it's not yet completely come. His time has not yet completely come. That is, his right and most opportune time. It's not the right and most opportune time for me to go. Of course, his brothers wouldn't know this. But Jesus knows it. He's deity. Verse 9 of John 7, "When he had said these things to them, he," remained in Galilee. There's that word remained, meno in the Greek. We saw it in our study of the epistles of John. Remain, abide, continue, dwell, live. So he remained in Galilee. He continued in Galilee. He didn't go with them. The inference in the text is they went ahead and went to Jerusalem to the Feast of Tabernacles. And lest we think that Jesus is not going to keep this feast, that would be a wrong inference to draw, because he's going to keep the feast, as we're going to see in the context. But he just didn't leave Galilee at the time his brothers did. He went at a most opportune time for him, after the plot of the Jews would have been spoiled. Verse 9, and when he had said these things to them, he remained in Galilee. Verse 10, but when his brothers had gone up, that is, they go up in elevation from Galilee to Jerusalem. When they had gone up, then he also went up to the feast. Note this, not openly, but as it were in secret. So he didn't go up openly, that is, he didn't go up publicly. He didn't go out in the streets, if he was at Capernaum, and say, hey, look, I'm headed to Jerusalem to the Feast of Tabernacles. If you want to go with me, go. Follow me. He didn't go up publicly, but he went up secretly. That is, he went up in a private manner. So he didn't travel with the bands or the caravans that were headed to Jerusalem at the beginning of the Feast of Tabernacles. He didn't travel in that large group of people in a public way. But he did go up to Jerusalem, but he went up privately. That is, he went up by himself, without announcing it, without people knowing when he was going.
Jesus had been traveling with a band of people, the Jewish leaders would have been
waiting on him. Right, and they were waiting on him. Verse 11, John 7. Note this. Then the Jews sought him at the feast. Then. This word translated then could be translated therefore. Or so then. Consequently. He went up privately. Instead of going up openly or publicly, he went up privately. Therefore the Jews. Consequently, the Jews, those who were antagonistic and hostile toward him, those from the Sanhedrin council, the Pharisees, the scribes, the Sadducees, the Jews sought him. They sought him. They were looking for him. They were trying to find him at the feast and said, where is he? Why were they looking for him? Does anyone have an answer? Because they wanted to kill him. Stated in verse 1. Because the Jews sought to kill him. From the time that he'd been in Jerusalem before, back in chapter 5, until now, they're seeking an opportunity to kill him. In strict contradiction to the teaching of the law of Moses, and Jesus is going to bring that out to him later on in this dialogue that he has with them. So these Jews, these unbelieving Jews, they're looking for him. Because his brothers have come up to the feast, but he has not yet come. But when he does come, he doesn't come in a public way. He comes privately. Verse 12. And there was much murmuring. Now we saw this word murmuring back in chapter 6 in regard to the people. They were murmuring and complaining. Even some of his disciples, the latter portion of the end of chapter 6. And there was much murmuring among, note this, the people. So there's a distinction between the Jews who are antagonistic and hostile to Jesus and the people, because the people were Jews as well. Verse 2, now the Jewish Feast of Tabernacles. So the people there were Jews, but the Jews, in verse 11, are those who are antagonistic and hostile. The people here are Jewish people, but They're just people in general who have come to the feast. Perhaps they've come from Galilee and Samaria and Judea, different parts of the known world, come to observe the Feast of Tabernacles. And there was much murmuring among the people concerning him. Why would there be much murmuring among the people concerning him? Because he had been preaching and teaching all over Samaria and Galilee. He had even been to Jerusalem before in Judea. And so, of course, they're talking about him. And some of the people, some said, he is good. He is good. That is, he's an upright man. He's noble. He's virtuous in the sight of God. He's a good man. But others said, now this is among the people, no, on the contrary, he deceives the people. So here's the two extremes. He's either a good man, one who is virtuous and upright and noble in the sight of God, and they recognize him as that. Some do. But on the other hand, some recognize him as a deceiver. So which is it? He's either a deceiver or a good man. That's their options. They don't have anything in between. They don't see him as the Son of God. They don't see him as the Messiah, the long-awaited Christ who was to come. Verse 13. Notice all the murmuring, you might say all the discussion about him that's taking place in the city of Jerusalem, because he's well known by this time. But note verse 14, verse 13, very important. However, no one spoke openly of him for fear of the Jews. No one spoke openly of him for fear of the Jews. No one spoke openly. No one spoke publicly. No one spoke boldly and courageously out in public regarding him, because if those hostile Jews toward Jesus, the religious leadership, if they heard you talking about him, and perhaps especially if you said he was a good man, they would bring the wrath of God down on you. I want you to note that. We have so much of this in our own time and society today. However, no one spoke openly. That is, there was no freedom of speech in regard to Jesus. You couldn't talk about him. If you talked about him and the religious hierarchy got the word, you might be excommunicated from the synagogue. You might be thrashed. You might be persecuted in some way.
It's the same way today.
Same way today. The time in which we live is perhaps, I don't remember it in my lifetime, I'm sure you don't, there's freedom of speech is being eliminated. If you say the wrong word today politically, that could be suicide for your future as a politician. If you say the wrong thing today as a school teacher or anybody, your life could be destroyed. And it was like that with the religious leaders in this day. If you disagreed with the hierarchy and the religious leadership, there was no such thing. You just didn't do it. If you did it, you suffered the consequences. All right, we're out of time. We're going to have to stop there. Not a good place to stop, but we'll pick up verse 14 next Lord's Day morning. Any other questions or comments?